What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of I Came With Fire podcast. I am Brandon, the host of I Came With Fire podcast. We have Chris, co-host I Came With Fire, and then Common Freaking Sense. And tonight we are joined by a very special guest, former Marine Corps Captain Chris Kuhner, who is going to talk to us about some very interesting stuff. First and foremost, thank you so much for coming on with us. And really, it's humbling to be able to talk to somebody who has the commitment level that you do and the passion for our country. And we'll give you the opportunity real quick to introduce yourself, and then we can just jump in on the conversation, get into your background, why you joined the Marine Corps, you know, all that stuff. So, Captain, thank you very much for joining us, and love to hear about you.
Brandon, Chris, appreciate you having me on your show. It's an honor to be here, and it's a privilege. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to speak. And I look forward to the rest of the show. I am an unapologetic American. I love this country, first and foremost. I am a Christian. My Lord and Savior is Jesus Christ, first and foremost. And everything that's guided my path is because of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ and God. And that is first and foremost. And I am a United States citizen, a country, a lover, a patriot. And I'm a father and I'm a husband. And ultimately, yes, I did serve this country for 22 years, enlisted and as an officer, infantry, United States Marine Corps. That's me in a nutshell. I mean, I've done a lot, but we can dig into the rest of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So what, you joined the Marine Corps in the early 2000s, correct?
Early 90s.
Early 90s.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question.
But I'm in my 50s, guys.
I was going to say, you don't look that old, man. Well, like, usually I tell you all about Desert Storm, you know?
I was going to say, usually it's black that don't crack and Asian that don't raisin, but man, your skincare routine must be off the charts, sir.
He's like, vitamin E oil is my friend, you know?
No, I have kids late in life, and you got to stay young. And that's, you know, I got an 8-year-old son, and that's what's keeping me young, so...
That's got awesome. I have a question for you, sir, right off the bat, that if you joined in the early 90s, you were in the military pre and post 9/11. Can you give, because you represent a generation of military men that are gone. Because when I joined in 11, and it was all post 9/11, and all my drill sergeants, all my cadre, all had deployment patches. They'd all been there, done that. And now that I'm in the company that I serve in, I can count on one hand the number of people that have actually been downrange. And it's a very weird turn for me in the military that I joined. Can you talk to a little bit, just for a little bit, about what the military was like pre-9/11 and post-9/11?
Well, it was different back then than it is today, and that's for sure. And I know everybody says, you know, a kindler general of Marine Corps. It was different when I went in. I would tell you, all my mentors, all my leaders were Vietnam veterans at the time and that were still around that were doing, you know, my first sergeant had been in Lebanon, you know, I had people that were Vietnam veterans, my battalion commander, you know, everything. I just had some straight up warriors and the mentality was completely different. It was about, it was about service to your country. But, you know, more than that, it was, you know, the Marine Corps, I would say the military service, because I speak Hula really good, too. You know, it was more about the individuals right now. Back then, it was about your brothers. It was about people to your left and the people to your right, because those are the people that you didn't want to let down. Those are the people that you didn't want to make a compromise as far as the job that you were doing. And so it is uniquely different because the conversations that we used to have back then, I mean, you can't do that nowadays. Yeah, you used to take it behind the freaking boathouse and that's how you work stuff out. And that's plain and simple. And you know what? I still have some of the best friends I've ever had back then today, either got my ass beat or beat someone's ass. And that's reality. So it is different. You know, I didn't have to worry about the DEI stuff. I didn't have to worry about, you know, if I was going to offend somebody. All I had to worry about is taking care of that person to my left and my right and doing the best job I can to serve my country and being a patriot. And that's what it was.
I miss that. I miss the idea that everybody's green. You know, it's like, you guys ever seen the beginning of Full Metal Jacket, which I think is like the first 10 minutes of that movie is probably one of the greatest movies that was ever made.
No doubt.
And he's going up and down the barracks and he stops and he's like, I'm going to call you Private Snowball. He stops at that black guy. Where are you from, son? Texas, sir. Bullshit. Only Sears and Queers come from Texas and you ain't got a horn. So I guess that narrows it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And like, I miss that. Yeah, I miss that, man. I miss everything about that. Which, by the way, pour some out for Arlie Ermey. Miss that guy.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, what you said about how it went from a team mindset to an individual mindset, I think is on purpose. I think that there's no greater way to erode that mindset and to erode what it means to be a part of a unit than to promote the individual over the collective that way. You know, when I joined the Air Force, I got told that this patch over my heart says U.S. Air Force. That's my family now. And that's gone away completely. And I think it's on purpose because it does, you know, when we focus on, you know, the DEI, we've got inclusion boards, we've got bake sales for this and that, all the other alphabet stuff going on. None of that is about the Air Force, you know, it's my experience, right? None of that is about the Air Force. None of that is about the military. It's about celebrating individuality and nothing to do with lethality, nothing to do with competency or job proficiency. I think that's on purpose, personally, to erode one of the more foundational tenets of the military.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Brandon. The idea, and you can see the stark contrast between then and now. Back then, yeah, you had your organizational structure. You know, you had a staff sergeant, squad leaders, and you had fire team leaders, and you had that structure. But back then, I remember when I was coming up, I remember having my platoon sergeant. When I first met this guy, I mean, this guy was like a god to me, right? Mm-hmm. But you know what he would always say? He said, just because I am who I am and I've been where I've been doesn't mean I'm right 100% of the time. Because whether you're a private or you're a general, everybody in the United States, he said the Marine Corps, but I would say the service, is a leader. Because some of the best ideas you might get might come from a private. And if you're not a strong enough person to open up your mind and listen to that person, you're really going to lose out. And we've gone to that, right? Because now what we have is we have groupthink in the United States military. And that is so dangerous when you get into that idea of groupthink. And, you know, we've moved away from focus, like you've said, on the team and what we can do to the team and what I can do as an individual to get ahead or be better or for myself. And that's not what the military is about. That's not what it's ever been about.
No, team before self. Self.
I mean,
like you come back from a mission, you download everything. Like, what are you supposed to do? Team gear first. Mm-hmm. All the team gear, all the crew serve weapons, all of that. Like, we dive in, team gear first. Then your own personal gear, because if my own personal gear isn't squared away, mags topped off, batteries changed, optics checked, then I'm not any good to the team. Then self. Then I can check on my bed, check on my hooch, check on all that. Like, team. So, right, like it's
well, and then before and you it's, go it's out, totally right, lost. Chris, you guys do PCCs, PCIs, right? And you're
right,
checking
and then
each other.
And then you that, exactly, like and you go out
back.
Exactly. Yep. You go out in the exact opposite direction. I check myself first because if my stuff's not
check.
Like we call it cow T over here. Oh man, now I'm blasted on the internet because I said it right, but it's your optics, your tie downs. Weapons, right? You check everything on myself first, because before I go to present myself to my team sergeant, my platoon sergeant, like I want to be squared away. Mm-hmm. And then he checks me, and then I turn around and I check my buddy, because we do triple checks every single time we go out. So it's a reverse operation. Yeah. Right before we go
it's
on
almost
a mission,
like the cycle of operations, you know, your M4, right? You know, at any point you know I'm just saying it's a cycle. It's all that team mindset completely and totally. But that's why I got out. I got out of the Air Force at almost 15 years because I watched this completely erode and focus on nothing to do with lethality. Like I said, the extremism stand down, which you probably weren't in for or were you? Do you remember that, the extremism stand down, the DoD extremism stand down?
No, I don't remember that. I know I got out in 20. I retired officially in the end of 2013.
Okay. So, yeah. Okay. So the extremism stand on essentially was, we went around and we were looking for signs of white supremacy or even things that are American historical symbols like the Gadsden flag that was considered extremism. I had to go through airmen, like we got to go to airmen dormitories and then go through them and look for some of these signs. My commander was handing out license plates for bumper stickers that were American Revolution affiliated
revolutionary iconography. Reference.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And we had conversations about, well, what does extremism look like in the military and why is white supremacy a problem? And this was something I was just like, what the fuck are we even doing? And then the vid, right? And the lies that had. And to me, that was just like the cherry on top. Like I couldn't wait for my enlistment to end. I had no interest in re-upping at all. But it's become so political and the yes men is insane. And I just couldn't handle it anymore. I was security forces. So, for the lame way of saying that is military police, right? For people to understand. It's just what the Air Force calls.
Stop doing that, bro.
What? Stop making fun of you guys?
Making fun of yourself, man.
No, I'm just saying when you say security forces, 99% of the time people are like special forces. And it's like, no.
Well,
security
everybody forces, knows. Everybody knows that SF stands for fucking stupid. So you're fine.
It's true. Yeah. But no, so I always just say military police because nobody knows what security forces means. But anyway, I don't want to be pushed around and, sent out to do something that they make against the UCMJ but conflicts with the Constitution and people's rights. And I get it, right? You're in the military. There are some things that you have to watch what you say because of the president and, the oath we took. But if they're going to push people out in the military, which is what they did on purpose, it's going to be people that aren't yes men. It's going to be people that want to make sure that the Constitution is upheld. And I don't want to be put in a position to either compromise myself or wind up doing something that I don't believe in. And so I removed myself from the situation is essentially what I did. Didn't believe in what was going on anymore.
Yeah. Then that's sad things because we needed people like you still to be in the service. So I apologize on behalf of my fellow service members that, got out 15 years. Cause I tell you, man, we need people like you. We still need people like you in the service. We're, dying breed. But as far as the service is concerned and the way it's going, the reason why that's happening is because there's a war on veterans right now, right? Mm-hmm. If you look historically and you look at cycles throughout history, they're going to try and push those leaders out. If you look at the January 6th stuff, right? Most of those people in some form of fashion have either served are veterans or served in some capacity, law enforcement, or I would probably say almost half of the people, the J6 prisoners and the people that are actually being actively prosecuted. And that's by design, right? Mm-hmm. So we actually filter out all the good leaders and the good people in our government, right? In our United States military, and they're out there being civilians, and we front load the military with freaking sea bags with lips, then we're weak, right? And we're weak by design. And that's
When you say sea bags, is this some kind of like Marine Corps joke that I'm too army to understand?
Oh yeah, like well, instead of saying shit bags, I just said sea bags.
Oh, okay, right? Got you. Yeah, I understand shit bag.
Sure. I was like, I know what an A bag is, but
I know my A bag, my B bag. Like, okay, got you.
Yeah. So, it's by design, guys. The whole idea of the Constitution is predicated that we, the people, own the government, right? We decide the republic, right? And so we decide what happens. And we've lost sight of that. And the politicians treat this as though it's a fiefdom and we are serfs and nothing but pawns to be moved around at will. And that's no different than the military. What's going to happen when push comes to shove and we have to actually go to a kinetic battle? I'm really concerned. I really am concerned.
Well, I guarantee you like they're going to call all the white boys back. I can't say that. Hold on. There's some things that I can say that I can't say,
Your
but I guarantee
is getting in front of you.
Yeah, I guarantee you I'm getting a little out over my skis, but I guarantee you if or when we are called back to service, there are going to be a lot of guys that are on what's called the individual ready reserve that are going to get called back immediately because they were in the Army less than 8 years or in the Air Force, Marine Corps, less than 8 years, which a lot of people don't read their contracts when they sign. Like, you actually owe the government 8 years.
Yeah, well, like, the IRR on there means.
You guys got to look at that. Look at that point in the contract. You're going to find yourself back in the military really quick, and there's going to be military police showing up at your door if you don't show back up at your closest base. Like, it's going to happen, right? And and we've seen some stuff happen in the news in the past couple of days between Israel and Iran. Like, we're getting kind of closer to it than a lot of people like to admit. But, sir, I you know, you mentioned January 6th, and I really want to spend the bulk of the conversation on this because I don't think a lot of people know what actually happened there that day.
I know.
You know, like,
I've seen on the ground, what was that?
Yeah, I've seen documentaries about it, but I had to go behind paywalls on like Fox News and like watch Tucker Carlson and stuff that a lot of people just aren't privy to. I would like to talk to you the bulk of tonight about what it was like there. So can you kind of give us like a lead up into like, were you at the Trump speech, the Patriot, what did he say? Peacefully and patriotically march down to the, to the Capitol. Like, were you there? Can you kind of like put us on the ground, like where you were and set us in that environment that a lot of Americans don't understand? Because let me give a little bit more context. I apologize because I was on my couch and I was in the Q course at the time that this was happening. And I actually went out on a 5 mile run and I came back and my wife, I sat down on the couch. My wife looked at me and she said, "Oh my God, people breached the Capitol." Yeah. And I was like, what? And I sat down and I pulled up Twitter and I started pulling through and I just saw videos of people just funneling through the Capitol doors, staying inside the ropes. And then I saw videos on CNN of people going into the chambers. And then we saw the videos of people with their desks or their feet up on the desks of like Nancy Pelosi's desks and like the famous like horn hat guy walking around. Yeah. And it was just like, it looked like pandemonium. Right. And like, that's what I saw. And that's where I came into the story. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And I remember looking at my wife and I said, well, if they don't do anything, then there's no story here. And that was the first thing that I said to her. I was like, okay, so they suspended counting the votes. Like, nothing is going to change. So that was my context of being introduced to that entire event. But you were actually there on the ground.
I was.
Okay, so please, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, let me take one step back, if you don't mind, Chris. And I appreciate it. It's a good lead in. So, you know, first and foremost, I took an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. I didn't take that oath because I didn't take that oath whether you're a Democrat. I didn't take that oath whether you're Republican. I didn't take that oath whether you're an independent. I swore to protect, and that's it. We're sheepdogs. So when President Trump was in office, you know, for 4 years, we watched cities be invaded by scumbags, get burned. We watched Antifa and foreign people come in. And I mean foreign people because I firmly believe if you watch those videos, you know, we had Ukrainians here. We had Russians here. We had other people out there working with Antifa, you know, and doing.
It was coordinated.
Quite frankly, coordinated.
Yeah, put a pin in that. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Quite frankly, coordinated tactical operations. And I'll get to that as soon as I talk about Washington, D.C., because I think I'll say a few things that are interesting.
Perfect.
I was not wanting to go to Washington, D.C. Initially for the rally. I had no intentions. I was living in Kansas at the time, snow on the ground, you know, the whole nine yards, right? So, but I was really sick and tired of seeing America burn. I was really sick and tired of seeing progressives, you know, and their agenda running amok. And, you know, people BLM. Don't realize that. There were people out there expressing their First Amendment rights. And liberals love to say they love the First Amendment rights. There were people out there that were conservative that were killed in some of these cities for expressing their First Amendment rights. There were people that were badly beaten and will probably never be the same. So I watched that with this fire that just kept building inside my heart, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't until January 4th that I decided to go to Washington, D.C. And I linked up with a couple people, talked to a guy I knew, and I linked up with a couple people who happen to be Proud Boys. I'm not a member.
And you're a civilian. You're retired from the military. Yeah. You're a full civilian at this point. Yeah.
So I hooked up with these guys. They were all Proud Boys. And decided to ride down. Not a big deal. I decided to ride down with them. We went down to Washington, D.C. And there was like this whole Kansas City Proud Boys group and everything. So that was, you know, the narrative they're saying that these people coordinated and conspired to do stuff. Look, this is just a bunch of guys that got together and decided to go to Washington, D.C. to protect people and to listen to the president speak. And that's my honest opinion, because I never heard or saw anything. I wasn't included in some of their conversations because I'm not a member. Sure. But I never heard anything that would give me cause or concern to take a step back at the time. I went down to downtown D.C. on morning of January 6th, and
I've been there, by the way. It's been since I was 7 years old, but a lot of people don't understand that the Capitol Mall, like, you can stand at the Washington Memorial, and mm-hmm. the government building is behind that, and the entire Capitol Mall is one giant block. Mm-hmm. Where you can see all, like, there's a subway that brings you up. You step out of the subway and it's the Capitol Mall stop, and you're there, and you can see everything from there. And the president was speaking on the other side of the Washington Monument, on the other side of the pond. And it's basically like what, like a 500, 700 meter walk around the mall to get to where the building is, right? So a lot of people don't understand, because they're just seeing it on the other side of cameras, like, that block of DC is Capitol Police owned, which is very important to understand. The Capitol Police own that block, which is a thing I'm sure you'll come back to. And like, where his stage was and where he was speaking was like 500 meters from where all the videos got taken outside of the Capitol building. Which was blocked off by fences. Yeah.
Yeah. You have even further, if you really think about it, if you're standing up at the Washington Memorial, you look back, you see the mall, you see the Capitol. If you look further and you see where president's speeches are, what do you see? You see the Vietnam Memorial, you see the World War II Memorial, you see the Lincoln Memorial, you see the Potomac River, you see to your left, you see the Holocaust Museum. To the right, you see the Museum of Natural History, the museum.
Right. That's my point. It's all right there. Like, yeah, it is
many cameras there that it's absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
But I went there and I have never seen so many people in one area in my entire life. It was absolutely just packed.
Which is interesting because they tried to tell us that it was like a – I remember looking back at the former videos, and they tried to tell us there wasn't a lot of people there. Like, when the president was speaking, the narrative was, oh, there's not a lot of people here. It's not a big deal. Do you remember that, sir?
I do.
Yeah. And so they said there's not a lot of people here. But then all of a sudden, when the January 6th like riot happened, then all of a sudden it was like – there's hundreds of thousands of right-wing extremists here.
Oh, they came out of the woodwork.
And it pivoted on a dime, which was hilarious, because I was watching it feed by feed. And I'm like, the same streams that are telling me there was only like 10,000 there, all of a sudden now like multiplied it by five. Like, what's going on, you know? So I'm just trying to provide context as we go through the timeline, because I remember watching it as you're talking.
I mean, there wasn't a place to stand. I was standing over on the hill where the Washington Memorial is overlooking. I could look to my left and see the Capitol and the National Mall. I used to work out in Washington, D.C. I was assigned to Marine Barracks 8th and I, so I know the area really well. And you could look to the right. I could see, you know, where the Ellipse were talking about. You could see where the president was speaking at the time. That place was packed. If you were to take a photograph of the day that Obama got sworn into office, and they took that picture of the National Mall, and you saw all those people on there, and you were to take a picture, because I remember being up high looking down and saying, oh my goodness, there were people as far as I could see. I mean, there was no comparison to how many people there were there that day, and how many people did they say there that were there for Obama's inauguration. What, a couple hundred thousand?
I would say that's what they said. I think like 160,000 is what they said.
I would say there's a half a million people there.
Wow.
That's insane.
I really would. I really would. But, you know, I didn't see any craziness, right? So I'll pivot on this. So I walked out. We came out of the metro on the metro line where they call it, what do they call it, BLM Circle or some shit now?
That's a travesty, like, but yeah.
Something like that, right? So
we It used to be the Capitol stop.
Yeah, Capitol stop. Now they call it.
I was there when I was seven.
Ridiculous. And, you know, I saw there's no reason. So you don't see any construction, right? But I see pallets of bricks along the walkway as I'm walking down that road, which actually leads to Constitution Boulevard. I see a pallet of what the hell do you call those propane tanks, mm-hmm. wire propane tanks around. What does anybody need that? And I wish I still had some of my footage or my photos. I'm sure someone does because I've seen some photos. But why do you have bricks staged? Why do you have pallets of other things staged? Because it was planned. It was mm-hmm. planned. And you could almost see like it was a human intelligence operation, right? I mean, the strategy, the strategic level, the operational level, and the tactical level combined so flawlessly. Like they were prepared. You could look on the corner. You could see people with cameras and video cameras on corners taping people as they go. Those weren't, you know, right-wing people. Those weren't conservatives just standing there. Those were people attempting to get operational, you know, their operational control and get tactical advantage and videotape people seeing the
wrong. Well, and I can say this from what I do for a living because it's completely unclassed. But if you go and you look at the unconventional operation manual, the information operations manual says isolate. Right, you isolate the objective, then you blow it up, and then you propagate it to everybody that you can. Like that's what they call it. Like isolate the objective, capture it, propagate it. That's information operations in a nutshell.
It's almost right? like subliminal messaging. You're walking by a pallet of bricks. What does it say? Right, like oh well, I'm gonna throw a brick through a window. Holy shit! There's five rows of pallets here because right I remember seeing them. It's like subliminal programming as you're walking down, prepping you mentally for doing something like that. Almost.
Yeah, and I got you know, the prosecution and everything. They said, "Oh, he came with a helmet." I hate to say this, but in 2006, I got injured pretty bad in Iraq, and I had already had a head injury. So I think it's probably pretty safe to say that yeah, I'm gonna come in and I'm gonna wear my freaking my headgear, and I was wearing, plates, you know, because what did we see? We see people get stabbed. We saw people. I mean, I didn't know what I was walking into.
It's not illegal to wear plates in this United States, you know?
But they say, here you go. Here's this right wing guy wearing his helmet and his plates, you know, out there. I was wearing a vest and I was wearing a jacket over it, but you know, I was out there to protect myself. I didn't know what I was going to run into. I was expecting kinetic operations. I was expecting to get really kinetic really quick with Antifa. That's what I was expecting. And that's the reason why I was there.
Okay. So pick up like were you at the Trump speech?
Did you see him speak? I was actually up. Yeah. So I was. I heard it. I saw it. Yeah, I absolutely was.
Okay. So he said, we're going to march peacefully, patriotically down to the Capitol. And then the crowd started to move, right? That's kind of the timeline that we understand.
Right, that is, for the most part, I can't speak because I only have one perspective, right? And I was kind of up on that little hill there. And yeah, okay. As soon as I said that, people already started going down there. I walked with a large group of people. We walked down the mall. People were chanting. But I tell you, man, I did not see people saying negative stuff. I saw people praying. Mm-hmm. I saw people singing. I saw people holding signs. I saw people showing patriotism, and I never once heard or saw anything that would indicate that violence was about to erupt, that anything was going to happen. And I never once heard anything that as a reasonable, right, we talk about reasonableness, that would reasonably say, hey, I need you to go down here and do this. No, go down there and peacefully protest, do all that stuff. I walked down the mall, didn't see anything. I never heard anything. I stopped over on Constitution Boulevard where there were some food trucks, right? So I was standing over there, and the narrative that the government put out is that the Proud Boys actually are the ones that breach. There's that little peace circle right there, and they mm-hmm. breach that first gate right there. I can't reasonably speak to that because I was at Constitution Boulevard. You know, look, man, I'm in my late 40s. I'm busted up old Marine. I was out there freaking kicking my heels. I've drinking some water and nursing my wounds, man. I was tired. But, you know, by the time I got up and I started walking over there, that gate had been breached, right? Yeah. I don't know who did it. I didn't see who did it. But I don't think the narrative that the Proud Boys did it, I don't think that's correct.
Well, did you have any inkling as you walked through? Was it breached and you flowed through, or were people just allowed through? Like, this is no longer a barrier.
Yeah.
But there was nothing there. I mean, what would you consider barriers, right? So if you go skiing and you see ski fencing, right, that's that flexible stuff.
Correct.
And bike things, is that a barrier? Is that a reasonable barrier? Is that
were there any Capitol Police keeping people from going through at that point? Right.
I didn't see any Capitol Police. I'll be honest with you. So when I finally came up to Peace Circle, there was no signage. There were no barricades. I literally just walked up that sidewalk. And by the time I got there, and I'm sure you've seen the videos and everything, that scaffolding and the inaugural platform, there were all those people in that pit. I never saw any barricades, not once.
None.
None. And so by the time I got up there, that whole area was full. And I didn't observe any violence, and I didn't observe it because when I walked up there, I immediately ran into, I saw a man laying on his back, who happened to be Benjamin Phillips and who later died. He was on his back.
Oh, shit.
He looked like he was in distress. Nobody was helping him. And there were people standing around him videotaping him. I mean, that's some culturally backward shit right there. You know,
I hate the cell phone call.
Society in a nutshell.
Back off, you know, get away. What are you doing? I mean, I can't believe people are doing this, right? Is anybody helping this guy? So I back some people off, and this big, this lady comes over. She just literally dives on him. She starts giving him chest compressions. So I'm trying to keep people back. Yeah. So yeah, totally just jumped on it. And so I said, hey, I'm going to go over, see if I can get EMS services. So I run down, and if you're familiar with the Capitol, I run all the
now,
way.
Now where, sorry, I'm sorry, sir. Where is this happening? Is this in front of the Capitol building?
This is to the left of the inaugural platform and that scaffold.
Okay. Okay. So, okay.
Yeah.
Where we saw videos of people like climbing up and the police are like shooting tear gas down in the crowd. Okay.
Yes,
perfect.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I go down to Constitution Boulevard. If you're familiar with the area, it's not just a hop and a skip. It's you got to go a little ways. So I get down there and I talk to EMS services, and they're like, "Hey, we're not coming up there. We're not going." I'm like, by this time it's like 15 minutes, right? The longer you're giving someone chest compressions or rescue breathing, the less chance they have their survivability just goes down significantly. So by the time I get back,
I'll tell you as a medic, it's actually less than 5 minutes. if you see an unwitnessed collapse, you have about 5 minutes to do something about it. And then the ER, if you deliver them there, they'll tell you, "I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for him." I'm just telling you from my medical experience. I'm an 18 Delta, unwitnessed collapse, and the guy's not breathing, he doesn't have a heartbeat. Sorry. Yeah.
He was already on the floor when I rolled up on him. He was already on the floor. I don't know how long he had been there. By the time I get there and back, it's a good 15 plus minutes.
Right.
And so I get over there, and finally we just throw this guy on a bike fence, and it was a group of people, and we all carried him down to EMS services and delivered him. And unfortunately he passed away. I don't know if it was a heart attack. I don't know what happened, but unfortunately he died that day. And I really don't think he was given a fair chance. I really don't.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, it was. But again, by the time I came back, I'm standing there.
In front of the Capitol building.
Yeah, right there next to the scaffolding to the left of it. And I'm looking up, and all these people had already flooded up the stairs. And that whole terrace is just full of people.
Now, may I stop you again? I apologize. Yeah. Because I'm just trying to follow the timeline. Were you there? Did you see the police firing tear gas and canisters down into the crowd. You weren't there to witness any of that?
That would have happened while
flashbangs,
Constitution Boulevard.
Okay.
So I never witnessed this. And it was literally that time frame by the time that happened. And we brought him back because now you're looking at us carrying this guy, and he's probably two and a half, 3 bills.
Yeah. You know, if it took you 15 minutes on your own, you know, it's going to take you. Yeah.
And so by the time we come back, that whole place is full. And I never saw anybody. I never saw any violence. I mean, I've seen some of the videos, but I've never seen it, right? Personally or doing that. But I noticed that people had flooded up, and this whole Western Terrace is just full of people. So I'm standing there looking up at this thing, and I'm thinking, man, this is my country. This is the Capitol building. I used to work here. I can't believe this is happening. You know, what's really going on? And I hear people, you know, hey, let's break this shit. Let's do that. And I hear some things, and it causes concern for me, right? So I'm standing there, and I didn't know this at the time, but I'm standing there, and I've got an FBI informant standing right next to me, and he didn't come with our group.
Shit.
Yeah. So he's standing there next to me, and he says to me, hey, man, do you want to go in? And I told him point blank. I was like, yeah, I'm really concerned that people are going to break stuff in my Capitol. I'm afraid that they're going to steal stuff, and I'm not okay with that. I'm just not okay with that, you know? So I didn't know who he was at the time, right? I didn't know this guy was an informant. I didn't know anything about it. My wife actually found this out later, and then it actually came out in the news who this guy was.
Wow.
So we literally go in there, and this guy's on my heels now, right? And I'm in there with another guy, Enrique Colon, who's also a government cooperator. And
that's one of the Proud Boy.
Yeah.
Proud Boy guys, isn't it?
Yeah. So I came with a bunch of people. So I came with Ryan Ashlock. I came with a guy named Nick Meitler, and I came with a guy with Enrique Colon. So Enrique Colon's a government cooperator. And by his own admission, his wife and the informant's wife were friends. So this guy ends up, So it's crazy, but that's another story. And then Ashlock actually fought with police and assaulted police, and he got a misdemeanor, and he's a government cooperator. And Nick Meitler is absolutely ghost. No photographs, no video. Can't find this guy. He's not charged. Ghost. Yeah. So this guy's ghost. So now I'm standing next to this FBI agent. So it kind of reminds you of like Michigan, right? When the whole thing.
And the supposed capture of Governor Whitmer.
People are informants, right? So I'm thinking back to myself, and I'm thinking about that commercial. I'm like, hey, man, you know, I'm an agent. You know, they're going through doing that. I'm like, yeah, this is kind of messed up. But hindsight's always 20/20. But I end up going into the Capitol. I would tell you this, man.
Which door did you go through? Would you mind telling
us? I went through a set of double doors. I walked up the back steps by the inauguration platform there in the scaffolding. I walked up the steps unimpeded. I personally didn't see any police officers until I literally was standing in line to walk up a handicap platform to go through double doors to walk into the Capitol. I was standing in line like I was getting on a ride.
What were the police officers doing that you saw?
I saw two for sure, police officers with, full riot gear. Their helmets were off, their rifles were slung, and I'm pretty sure they had condition 4 weapons because I didn't see a magazine inserted. So I'm assuming the bolt was home on an empty chamber and the weapon was on safe. So does that tell you they were scared? I'm just saying, you observe stuff like that, right? That's our job.
No, for sure.
So, I observed that personally, that I saw that when I was walking in and they were just standing
100%. Anytime I see a person with a weapon, like I'm trained, I'm like, what? And I look. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm sure
they were conditioned for weapons and they were just standing there and they weren't doing anything.
So in the Army, for any of my Army bros out there, we would call that condition green. So we do red, amber, green. Green, no magazine, no round in the chamber.
Yeah,
that's a clean weapon.
I'm just trying to, you know, talk to the meathead Marines, right?
Well, you got to, sir. We gotta pull them along. It's fine.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah,
but they were just standing there, weapons slung.
Just standing there, weapons slung. I walked through the double doors. And, you know, I saw people taking selfies again, singing, chanting, this is our house, carrying flags, nothing crazy, right? But it's kind of interesting, some of the facts that come out in my case, and they are.
Well, facts. Sorry, before we do that, can you tell us a little bit about what it looked like inside the Capitol? Was anybody outside of the ropes? Was anybody like gallivanting around? Was there any like tomfoolery or rapscallionry? Okay.
Yeah, there was, you know, there were people in there that were agitators and stuff. And because I'll tell you this, right? So I think there were people in there were agitators. I think there were everyday patriots in there. And then I think there were idiots. And I'll just keep that out there, right? Useful idiots. Like when I walked in for the first time, there was a little office space to my right. It just looked like a sitting room. And I see this guy over there smoking a joint. And I walk over there. I walk over there and I look at him and I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, are you serious? And I reached out my hand and I just smacked it out of his mouth. You know, I'm like, get out of the Capitol.
Get
out of the Capitol. I just,
dirty
just
hippie.
I cannot tolerate that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You
know,
yeah.
Carry smoking weed. Care less about that. But come on.
I'm going to play that shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
The decorum. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there was some stuff like that. There's people talking trash. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I get in there, because I was really concerned. As I was going through what they call the crypt. So I never was down on the lower rotunda, which is the ropes, which you're talking about.
Okay.
I was on the upper side, right?
Okay.
And so I was walking down towards the crypt and I ran into a guy who was carrying a flag that belonged in the Capitol because it still had a pedestal on it, you know? And I'm like, hey man, you can't take shit, you know, go put it down, put it away. He's like, all right, you know? So I stopped guy from stealing stuff, right? But there's videographical evidence out there. The one thing I did do while I was out there was I made people clean up trash. Because by the time I get down to the crypt, right, I literally see bottles on the floor,
you.
Paper on the floor. I see all the trash on the floor, and I'm like, you know what? No, it's time to do some police call, gents. So I literally,
everybody, hands on hands. Let's go. Right. Let's sweep across the Congress floor.
That's right. It's time to do a FOD search.
Just like the Raiders, dude.
You know, I was very loud about it. And I was like, hey, you know what? Pick that shit up. Telling this guy, go pick up a bag. And there's video of me, you know, putting stuff up. And I think it was some reporter. I think it was Rycliffe or I forget his name. But he jokingly said, this Marine's on full dad mode. Because I was literally making people clean up.
Dad mode activated.
That's right. Right. So if that's the worst that I did, right.
Yeah.
And then I left. I mean,
when did you leave then? So you're in there, like at what point did you exit the building?
So I was actually down and there was a group of people.
How much of the building did you see before you exited?
I didn't see much. Right. So I only went down the crypt area that they call it. So I didn't go that far.
Okay. You police called and then you exited
the internal workings of the Capitol, but I didn't go that far.
You didn't. You didn't infiltrate any of the offices. You didn't infiltrate the congressional room or the senatorial room.
Nancy Pelosi's desk. Yeah.
No. You didn't. Yeah. You didn't. Okay.
Yeah. No. Not at all. No. I didn't. Teabag the first.
You were allowed into the building.
Left the Duke in AOC's desk drawer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I probably would have, by the way. But anyway, so sorry, Frank, that was for you. That's our FBI agent that watches all these podcasts. That was for you. I wasn't there, though, Frank. I wasn't there. Check my phone. Anyway, so you were in the building. You were there for approximately how long?
Maybe 20 minutes.
20 minutes, and then you made your fellow patriots police call the building, and then you exited.
I actually, there was an interaction between me and he was a police lieutenant. I'm almost positive, you know, because it was almost a surreal thing, right? So I see this police lieutenant and this guy is just, I mean, I'm sure, right? You know, the stress. I mean, this guy's probably never been inoculated in the stress like we have, right? But the stress that this guy's going through. And I look beyond him and I see this young man, for lack of better words. and he's a police officer, and he's standing there, and he's just crying.
Oh, and shit.
Yeah, and it just and it spoke to me, right? What can I do? You know, so I talked to this lieutenant, and I'm like, what can I do to help you? Because there were some agitators out there getting in his face, causing problems. And kudos to him. You know, he didn't retaliate. He didn't escalate. He did a good job of pretty much trying to, but these people wouldn't back off. And so I literally say, hey, what can I do for you? And he's like, can you help make people leave? Hey, roger that, sir. I got you back. You know, get the fuck out. Everybody right now, get out. Let's move. You know what I'm saying? Using that command voice and making people leave. And you know what?
Yeah, save from your chest, sir. Like that's what you guys don't have right now. Yeah.
That's right. And people left, you know, because they know. So we get out there and I, you know, talk to the police officers. I'm leaving.
And you exited through the same door that you came in?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. So when I finally got to those same double doors that I was trying to get out, I don't know if they're Capitol Police, Metro Police. I don't know who they were, but there was a whole group of people at that door, and they put chairs, podiums,
okay,
all kinds barricading of stuff in that doorway to blockade it. And there was literally a group of people fighting.
Why would you
trying to get back in?
Why would you blockade people in?
Well, it's interesting, right? So you see the cops fighting with this group of people, and I talk to the officer, and I'm like, "Hey, how can I get out of here?" And he's like, "You're going to have to crawl through this window." So I crawl through the window and remind you to get back out, because there's two windows on the side of these double doors. So I crawl out this window and remind you, I'm telling you what this was, right? There's a double doors and there's like a handicap fence, and it goes, it's kind of a hallway. It's like a big wide area and it kind of goes down, and then it opens up into the inaugural platform, right? So I crawl out this window and I see this group of people fighting to get back in, and then nothing. It's just that group of people. And I walk maybe about 25, 50 feet, and I run into the throng of people out there. So imagine, if you will, no man's land. Nobody's doing anything. Nobody's doing anything wrong. And the small group of people fighting to get back into the Capitol. Just really odd. And then I tried to – I know people want to expect to hear more about my experiences and stuff, but –
I think
just the honesty. That's what you're saying, man. What really happened to you?
Because nobody's been there. Absolutely. We're all just seeing videos from the outside. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Third party perspective.
I mean, I couldn't even get off the. I'm surprised nobody got injured or killed, because when I actually got onto that platform, there were so many people. I remember looking out over that kind of edge, and I remember seeing a sea of people down there.
Still, that never went in the Capitol. They're just still out there.
Yeah, just standing there. Singing.
I think that's really important for people to understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Singing, praying, I mean, just dancing. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. But I literally could not get off that inaugural platform. It was so crushed, packed full of people. I literally had to get up on the stairs. I had to get up on that side rail. And I had to slide down, and then I had to shimmy down an electrical conduit to get down and leave.
Damn,
I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous.
So, Brandon, yeah. I think now would be a good time to talk to his post experience dealing with the law enforcement. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would want to know where you found out there was some legal trouble for you, where that all began. Like, were you one of those people that they contacted post and said, hey, were you there? Like, what happened? I got a video of you, etc. Like, where did this all start for you legally and the troubles that now you're going through?
So later on, once documentation, we were starting to get stuff right from the government as far as discovery, we found out that the FBI had been actually watching my house for, I don't know, a couple weeks, right? And then a couple weeks
post incident,
they had already been watching my house. Right.
What the fuck?
And another interesting thing here, and I'll get into this in a second. You're familiar with the FBI whistleblower, Garrett O'Boyle, right?
I've heard of. Yes.
Okay. He was at my house the day that they raided my house, and he's been other things. Yeah. He's tried to apologize. And there's, you know, we talk about law enforcement and the reasonableness of doing something, lawful orders.
Familiar.
Talk about those things. So I'll get in that in a second.
Can I tell you a story, sir? Like yeah, a really please. Fast story. So I was sitting around a campfire one time with a Green Beret buddy, and like no names, no nothing. But he brought like a first time girlfriend, and we were
is
just sitting around.
Really, oh gosh, brunch? Is that joke?
Right. So this is, no. This is a real story. This is a real story. So we're just sitting around the campfire, and then we're just talking to each other about, you know, weapons we may or may not have bought, and like things that we may or may not have at our houses, and like how proud we may or may not have been about things that we may or may not have owned.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just a woman that he was like, you know, she's been my girlfriend for like a week. And then his house got raided the next week. And what? Turns out she was a AFT agent.
Wow, dude.
Wow.
And he was like that bitch, by the
that
way.
That is the worst luck ever, man.
Yeah, I think I would
have. Oh, God.
And I was just the one guy right? sitting around the campfire that afraid. I'm like, I'm not gonna talk about what I have at my house. I don't care where I'm at, and like I don't know who all these chicks are.
She
like
just like looks at you across the fire. Hey, do you have any bump stocks?
Yeah, by the way,
like, why
have
you
ever asking? Have you ever yeah. heard about a rapid fire burst trigger? Like,
yeah. yeah. How much 227 ammo you got at home? Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
So a weird thing
that's
to ask.
Oddly specific, Ashley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Can't trust them feds, man. I'm just no. saying.
Man, they've got their fingers in everything.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have to do what they did to my family, though. I will tell you.
Yeah, please, yeah, please no, continue. I'm sorry. I need to inject some levity.
We do. That story
may or may not be true also.
May or may not.
May or may not. Cannot confirm or deny.
We're not. You know, remember I said earlier that there's a war on veterans? You know, throughout history, when you think about those service members like yourself, me, you, that get out, right? Who are the ones that actually fought for liberty when you consider the Revolutionary War, right, against England? It was those people that had fought with the Brits before mm-hmm. and were veterans of a war, right? So what's the best
George thing? Washington.
What's the first thing that the Brits did? They went after the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
So take a page out of that playbook. What's the best way to do that is to go after your veterans, to, you know, get them, find them guilty of a felony, right? Pull away their Second Amendment rights, you know, make them felons. That's just, there's nothing easier. Yeah. So what they did to me was an attempt to make a statement. They could have come and knocked on my house, knocked on my door, and then they could have said, hey, Mr. Cuny, we'd love to talk to you. And I would have told them, okay, my constitutional right says I have a right to get a lawyer. I'll talk to you, and I'm going to get a lawyer. And that's where we would have gone. But on the early morning of February 11th, with snow on the ground,
what year?
They freaking came in.
Sorry, sir. What year?
2021.
Yep, 2021.
Okay.
Thank yep. you. And they came in and they raided my house. Not just a raid. I'm talking, listen to this, man. A bear cat in my front yard, a bear cat in the side of my house, a bear cat in the back of my house, completely locked up my neighborhood and prevented people from going to work. Oh, and they had an ambulance right next to my house because they were probably expecting some shit.
That's more fuck? Armory than we do. Raids on terrorists' house in Afghanistan.
Right. And they had counterterrorism task force come into my house. And here's the issue that I have, right? My wife at the time.
Can you go back? Like, did they yeah. actually breach your front door?
Right.
Like come in? Or
I should have sent you the ring. I have the ring doorbell video of
oh,
them
please.
Coming in.
Yeah, please. Can you send this to us
yeah.
after this? Because we'll overlay it on this podcast
they
so that people can see it as we're talking about it.
Oh yeah, when they come in, actually, I'm gonna have my wife, who's my technical advisor, come over here
nice.
On the sidelines and see if I can't get her to pull this up here on there, and if I can't share it with you. Okay.
Yeah, so, please.
If you could,
otherwise we can
point.
Can
I'll
play
put
it
on. Yeah, because I'm gonna
back
I'll put
in,
it
yeah.
in the clips we pull for this as well.
Yeah, this is going to give you some perspective. When I show you this, it's going to infuriate you, right? My wife, and I keep
that's
in mind.
Nuts, man.
My wife
children.
Was pregnant at the time. My son is 4 years old. and they came with a significant amount of firepower to my house and completely shut down my neighborhood. I think my wife is trying to figure this out. No, don't go there. You're going to have to pull it over there.
Mrs. No Kune, nice to meet you.
Yes, nice to meet you.
She's the brain trust of this house, that's for sure.
Household six. Ma'am.
I'm right here. Let me give this to you. I'll transfer this over to you here.
But anyway, let's continue to talk about it. So they raid your house. Did they come in the front door? Like, did they Simo breach your house too?
So my wife actually came out the front door first, and man, I tell you what, so my wife is holding my son. It's 7 degrees out. My wife's pregnant in shorts and she's barefoot.
Right.
And my son's in his pajamas and they've got lasers all over her. Right. And
what?
Oh yeah. Lit her up with lasers. You know, she's in the line of fire. I mean, let's think about this.
I'm really angry for you right now.
What if she would have done something? They could have lit her up, and that would have been the end. My wife would have been gone.
Brandon, can you talk about this as a police officer a little bit? Mm-hmm. Like when you go on to an objective, like I understand things from breaching standpoint of like I understand that there's people on this objective that have weapons, so mm-hmm. I go in with hostile intent. Can you talk about this a little bit from a police officer's standpoint of like, do you ever breach a house like that where it's like this is just a normal family?
Well, I'll say this, right? First and foremost, any breaching that I've ever done has never been for any reason like that to go after somebody in that way, right? So practicing breaching for recovery, certain things, you know, Broco Torch, K-12 saw, battering ram, stuff like that, explosives, you know, but then...
Right, but this is a house in a... This is a house in a suburban neighborhood.
Exactly, that's
right?
What I'm getting at, man. Like, the sort of practice you do for stuff like that is for serious things, like recovering a nuclear weapon, or you're going after a high-value target. Like, you know, the way you're talking about it, this is breaching Bin Laden's house. You know, that's what it's like. That's the level that it's at. And rolling that deep in a military way like that, you know, what I assume is probably some sort of SWAT interdiction team that's there to come after you like that. It just feels like massive overkill, not for somebody like you who, if they've got you on video, you know, it's not like you showed up with two ARs and, you know, a bunch of pistols and shit and you're fucking walking around the Capitol flagging people or whatever. I don't know. You know, this to me seems incredibly like a show. You know, almost like a dog and pony show in a way to capture you on video, show like they're doing something, make it overdo it so that it seems like they're doing something, that you're that dangerous. They're putting themselves in danger to go after you, to make it seem like something more than it actually is, to make a point, like you said, to make an example out of you. But, you know, I've never gone in and forcibly removed somebody from their house that way, you know, and that's just, to me, that's insane. That's absolutely
and
insane.
And sir, I actually have a question for you during this. Did you notice, was there any press on the lawn when this was happening?
They came after. My wife said they came after. Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't do their due diligence because that's where the FBI whistleblower comes in, right? So that's an interesting topic unto itself. He took a picture that day and he said, you know, the perspective of this is just, you know, 3 years later, it blows my mind. Here's this upper middle class home. Here's this light, the American flag hanging over my awning, and this huge bear cat illuminated in my front yard. And all the FBI agents, right? And he's like, something about this just wasn't right. And we're talking about, you know, you're a police officer, Brandon, right? We talk about reasonableness, right?
Yep.
So the first thing they talk about, is there reason, is there cause, is the liaison for the FBI simply told the people at the time, I was in my basement making guns. This guy's a previous Marine Corps scout sniper. This guy's a highly trained Marine. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. They didn't tell people that I had had wrist surgery 5 days prior to them raiding my house, and I was absolutely, completely unable to do anything to them. They didn't tell people that I had a legal gun business and I had an FFL license. No, wow. They didn't tell people that. So that was why they came in my house, supposedly guns blazing. But they did it to make a statement. They did it to tell all the people in my neighborhood that if you step out of line,
you better
be ready. We're going to get you and we're going to do this to you too. So you better stand by.
Mm-hmm. That's some scare yellow tactic. Shirt bullshit.
I sent you that video,
brown Brandon. Shirt, yeah.
Yes, or brown shirt. Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Brandon. Yeah. That's some brown shirt bullshit. So, sir, if you can tell me, like, where were you in the house, like, when they took you into custody? Did you come down and meet them, or did they find you, or how did that work?
You know, I just sent you that video, Brandon. You should have it.
Yeah, we got it. We'll overlay it here so we can.
So, I just got woken up. My phone started ringing, and I heard over the microphone, "Christopher Cuny, come out of your house."
Oh, they called you out?
Oh, yeah, and they called my phone.
But hold on. Did they breach before they called you out? Because that's like a serious okay.
No. They called me out. They called my phone, and then I hung up my phone because I was like, what is going on? And they kept ringing it. I look out my back door, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. There's an ambulance. There's.
But that's also very interesting that they had your phone number, too, which shows a lot about the ability of the federal government. They had your phone number. They were calling you and calling you on bullhorn all at the same time.
Yep. So I just woken up from a deep sleep, right? So I have no clue what's going on. And my wife is the first thing she's telling me, you know, my son's in there. He's crying. He's scared, you know, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know what? What am I supposed to do? You know? So my wife says, hey, I'm going to go downstairs, you know, just get dressed. So I literally throw on some sweats and I've got my arm in a sling and I've got a cast on my wrist and my arm, you know? So I literally walk out there after they, you know, I give myself to them or whatever. And they just, you know, crammed me in the snow. I mean, they just pile drive me in the snow.
Like for no reason.
Oh yeah,
you presented yourself to them as a compliant.
I'm screaming in pain because I just had surgery, and these guys literally—I mean, I've got stitches in the side of my wrist, on the top of my wrist—and these guys slap on the cuffs as tight as they can get it, and I'm literally hollering in pain. So,
are you guys able to see the screen? It's giving me some issues. Bro. No,
now we're just, we just keep talking while you're clicking.
Yeah.
So they completely mishandled you, like. Yeah. We don't even do that in the military. Like, as long as you have compliance with a person, and you know this, sir, because you were in the Marine Corps, as long as you have compliance with a person, like, there's no reason to cause them extra pain. I have compliance. Like, they're good. Yeah. Move them to the wall, get them out of the way, and then just do what you have to do with the, like, and you puck them, right? What puck is person under compliance, right? Like, you move them away, but they mistreated you is what you're saying.
Oh yeah, they threw me in the snow and just manhandled me. I mean, it wasn't necessary. How many times have you seen, you know, police officers even after an altercation, you know, and somebody complies and they just bring them over to the wall, spread their legs, put their hands, you know, and they cuff them, right? It's not a big deal, and they literally do the handcuff carry back to the car or whatever. They could have done that to me. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done anything. I mean, literally.
You literally came out your front door and presented yourself to them. I am. This is the person that you're looking for. Right? And I'm sure you weren't presenting a weapon or anything like that. You had your hand in a cast. Like, this is me. And they still
didn't have anything. I mean, who could have known if I had a cell phone in my hand? Oh, bam, bam, bam. I mean, they might have just, I had something in my hand. I mean,
and they still treated you that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's incredible. Can we rotate over and talk about so apparently from there
the QuickTime player is giving me some issues, but I will put it up with the episode.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. So it'll all be playing while we're talking about this, sir. But okay, so let's rotate from there and talk to you about what it was like while you were behind bars. Like, so I'm sure they took you from there, they detained you, and then you were Were you correctly indicted, arrested, indicted, and then tried? Like, talk to us about that.
I was indicted, and then I was arrested, and formally charged.
Okay, so that's not in the correct format at all. Brandon, can you tell the people a little bit from your police background of like how somebody's supposed to be
Mirandized? The way the military does it is going to be a lot different than the civilian way, right? And so the way we do it is a lot different. So I don't want to misspeak and say something that, you know, I'm not accustomed to. I've never worked as a civilian law enforcement officer, but you can speak to exactly what happened to you throughout that legal process. And first, you know, when you got charged and all that, like if you could break that down, you know, what that looked like.
Yeah. Well, I know that I was already indicted. Mm-hmm. And that's why they came after me. So when I actually went in front of the magistrate in Kansas, they told me the charges that were being presented against me. I was in the custody of U.S. Marshals at the time in Wyandotte County.
And what were the specific charges that they were levying against you?
I don't remember them all, but it was conspiracy, civil disorder. I mean, there were quite a few. I think there were six,
okay,
if I'm not mistaken. Most of them were felonies. There were a couple misdemeanor charges, but most of them were felonies. Just okay. Really overcharged. But I will tell you this though. So regardless of circumstances, how we've all been conditioned, I shouldn't have spent a single day in jail. You know, I eventually got sentenced to 75 days in jail, and I've heard, oh, well, you've only got 75 days in jail because there's people in there doing years or two. But yeah, we shouldn't be conditioned to think that any day in prison for this is okay.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I went through the whole process as far as the criminal proceedings. And I will tell you, I equate it to walking down a hallway. You know, and as I'm walking down this hallway, I have doors on my left, I have doors on my right, right? And then finally, you know, the government kept saying, oh, we need to toll the speedy time clock. We need to discovery. It's in the best interest of the government. We need to, and they kept doing it and doing it. 3 years, 3 years, they kept doing it, right? And then so finally, I get to the end of this hallway and I've got one door to go through. And that is either go to trial in front of a group of biased jurors in the Washington, D.C. area who are going to convict me of everything plus some, right? Or I can plead guilty to a felony civil disorder. Civil disorder, I mean, civil disorder was a felony, but it's the civil disorder that was introduced in the 1960s during the Fair Housing Act that was originally used to imprison Black people during the Civil Rights Movement. And it hasn't been used in decades. So that's what I got found. That's what I pled guilty to. So now I'm Captain Christopher Cuny, United States Marine retired, with an F behind my name because I'm a felon. So, you know, but that's the thing, though. I just, you know, pray that President Trump just, you know.
Pardon me too.
I have a question for you, sir, if I may. And I know I just sat back down. But if President Trump were to ask you to take a position in his administration after this, would you accept?
Yep, absolutely.
You've been approached by anything like that?
No, I haven't. I've considered running for, you know, office. I've been asked to kind of run for office. But like I said before, right, my faith and my path rely solely on, you know, my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, right? Yes. I really believe that God is going to direct me what to do and when to do it.
And you and I both know, if you read the scriptures, it says that leaders are risen up and taken down by God.
Yes.
Right? So we saw a thing, 19 days ago now, guys, where President Trump was almost assassinated within a millimeter of his life.
That's like, providence.
I think 100%. So too, sir. I think
it's the
so
first
too.
Thing like, I thought of when I saw the video, I couldn't believe it.
Because you and I both, like, we all three, we know ballistics. Like, there's no way, right? There is just absolutely no way. And we've seen all the stuff that has come out, you know, as
yards.
Yeah, as right. And I thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. So for a good Marine rifleman or a good Army rifleman, and then for you, Brandon, you guys click on this on your computer screens, like 150 yards, like that's the third target in the sequence.
Yeah.
That is the third easiest target to take down with your iron sights.
Yep.
Right? You have Fast Freddy. Fast Freddy pops up. That's the 50-yard target. You hit the very base, right? Yep. Right there. That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying, sir. And this guy was just like, you know, and like all this evidence is coming out about him. And it was like somehow that building is inside of the perimeter. Yeah. I don't know why the Secret Service didn't have that building in the like the perimeter looks like a Pac-Man. It goes around that building and then cuts in. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that. They worked with Leo. Leo said, oh, they never even talked to us. We didn't have comms with them. We were taking that building, but we were inside the building because it was too hot. And then now it comes out that where they were in the building, like they could see the roof from where they were, but yep. like they didn't see the guy. And now we have like videos coming out that says the dude was running around on the roof, and we have it from cell phone footage where people are like, yeah, there he is running around like 10 minutes before Trump was shot. There he is. Nobody did anything. The Secret Service didn't remove Trump from the stage. They didn't have comms with Leo.
They let him stand up like, again, which is crazy.
Right. I'm not even talking about the extraction. I'm just mm-hmm. talking about everything in front of it. Right. And it's like, sir, you know, I said this right after all those videos came out. I said I could take a platoon of army
bunch
privates,
of specialists.
A platoon of army privates, fresh out of OSINT, and I could go to that, you know, that field and be like, "Hey, we need to provide security for this field. You and me, like, we're eight dudes, and I'm a staff sergeant. Where do you think we should be?" They'd be like, well, that water tower looks pretty good, and that building right over there looks pretty good. We should probably at least be there, right? Right, sir?
What about
like, this shit doesn't make any sense to me.
Oh, SMEAC, right? I mean, there are so many failures, and it just needs to be investigated. And that's the bottom line, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't for a minute, right? So you're Special Forces guy, Air Force, I'm Marine. Before we go on target, right, how much intelligence do we gather?
Thank
do
you.
We get reconnaissance? Do yep. we get signet? Do we get
no? Signet? No objective yeah. is complete until eyes on reconnaissance has been done.
That's right.
You have map reconnaissance first, and then the recon goes out, and then you have eyes on reconnaissance, and now you can complete your plan. Everybody knows this. It's the basic Ranger handbook. And if you're out there, go look up the Ranger handbook. It's completely unclassified. You can see it. That is the Army's infantry handbook in a nutshell. You can go see it. No objective is secured until reconnaissance is complete.
That's right. And that's
it's just the way we do things.
That's right.
And it doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I listen to that complete failure because the first thing that comes to my mind, I'm going to go old school on you, right? Safe, right? Security, avenue of approach, fields of fire, and encapsulation, right, of the actual objective. So, little acronym there.
We love our acronyms.
Well, in the Army, we do SSA, and then we un-ask the objective. So, it's security, support by fire, assault. That's the objective. And then when you're done, you un-ask the objective, which is the Ranger handbook. Assault yep. pulls off first, support by fire, and then the very last thing in place? Fucking security! You yep. never... Don't even get me started on the withdrawal from Afghanistan. Don't even get me started.
No. Yeah. But yeah, it's a complete failure. Absolutely complete failure. We were, what, half an inch from a civil war that day, I would argue to say. That would have happened.
Like 1.5 millimeters.
Yeah. I mean, that's just...
Now, that you just brought up a thing, like, sir, do you really think, because my most hated person in America right now is the I wish a motherfucker would guy.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right? The faux...
You're talking about the bumper sticker cowboys?
Yes.
Okay. That's a good one.
So you actually said that, like, we're, you know, I said 1.5 millimeters, you said an inch. Do you think if he would have gotten shot, do you think these guys would have actually like no. risen up?
No, the guys that have like 50 million stickers on the back of their car, you know,
thank
stuff
you.
Like that.
I feel like if they would have been a part of this fight, they would have been a part of it right now with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's other ways to really go about doing it. I mean, do I really think that something like that would happen? I pray not.
Same.
Because those of us that have been in combat and actually had to take somebody's life, it changes your life forever. We as human beings are not meant to kill other people. And when you have to go kinetic and you go into battle, it affects you. You know, unless you're a complete psychopath or a sociopath. I mean, just those are the people. But it affects you and it changes you forever. So I pray, I would pray that we never see anything kinetic in this country. Mm-hmm. I would hope that we could actually come together, coalesce, and get along and kind of make this thing work. And that's my hope.
I think I'm going to be the black pill guy right here.
Okay.
I think we need to start like preparing our children for the other way. You know what I mean? Like I have four sons at this point. And I do. I pray that my sons never see the combat that I've seen. I do. I pray that. But at this point, like the pragmatist in me says I need to start training my sons for war, because I think they're going to see things that I couldn't comprehend, because in the last 3 months we've seen a president be completely by order of like a coup supplanted on like inside of a party that says they're all for democratic process. They've completely supplanted him and removed him and put another nominee forward. I saw a presidential nominee almost assassinated like that. Like I've never seen that in my lifetime. The last one was Reagan. That's before my lifetime. So I saw a presidential nominee almost assassinated. Israel just sent drone strikes inside of Iran against, you know, freaking terrorist commanders. Like the world is spinning out of control.
Well, and here's the thing. There's a term that's gotten thrown around a lot this past year, and it's lawfare, okay, because of the Donald Trump trials. But really, Captain, you're a perfect example of how long lawfare has been going on in this country and people like you, right? Say that again.
I'm still being prosecuted. It's our society as a whole. When you say lawfare, that's a perfect example. And I'll come back, Chris, because I definitely want to comment on what you said.
Yeah, please.
Brandon, you know, the lawfare, it's, you know, when does the prosecution and the persecution actually stop? President Trump's been going through this for years.
Absolutely
ridiculous. And the whole purpose is to beat the man down. The whole purpose of doing what they're doing to me is to beat me down.
Yeah. You know,
I get evicted from my house. I plead guilty. The next couple of days, I get evicted from my house. Right. I plead guilty. I get fired from my job. You know, I plead guilty. Right. I get bumped from, you know, some corporate services that I was using, and I get bumped from and banned from using that. I mean, hell, I was actually banned. I'm a Wounded Warrior Project alumni. I actually reached out to them for help, for mental health help, and was told that I was excommunicado.
No
what
shit.
What the hell, dude?
What happened?
Hey, Wounded Warrior. Hey, Wounded Warrior, we're going to have something to say to you about this.
Yeah, that's fucking bullshit,
dude. What the fuck is that? What the fuck is that, Wounded Warrior? I know some people there. I'm going to be talking to you. Yep. Just wait.
We got excommunicado, found out it was like 7 days.
You're in the gun business. Now you can't do that now either. That's gone. Way of life, gone.
Yeah, and that was my passion. I love firearms. I'm a really good gun builder, gunsmith, and I love it. But yeah, that's gone.
Wounded Warrior.
So my ability to
defend my family and
do that stuff. So yeah. But to come back, Chris, because I think what you said is really important, because I think there's a class of people in the United States that really feel that they should be you know, preparing their family for, you know, that thing. But I'm going to take this kind of.
I said war. I don't think war is the correct. I got a little bit like.
Well, no.
Like impassioned. I think what I'm saying is like I'm preparing my sons for a country that we don't recognize anymore.
Yeah.
To where it's like you can't trust your neighbors anymore. Like you have to. Like our country used to be a first world country where I could let my kids go out under the streetlights and just be like, you know, be home when the streetlights come on. That's the way I was raised. Like what I'm doing now is like now I have to teach my sons like, hey, if they ask you who your dad is, like, don't say that. If they ask you, you know, these things, it's like, now you have to be careful about saying that. And it's like, that's a hard thing to teach a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, why am I protecting my father's identity?
Conceptualize. Yeah.
Right. You know, and it's just like, so that's what I was saying. Not necessarily preparing them for war. That might've been a little hyperbolic.
Well, no, but it is. I get it. But it still is, you know, in a sense, because we're fighting a gender war classification, you know, when sure. the needs of the few outweigh the needs of the many.
Thank you.
So, you know, we're fighting this battle, and we'll just, let's just put it in. It is a war, but do I think that the country's going to be there? I think my personal opinion is sure. we're already in that phase where that rapture is coming, buddy. I mean, he is coming, and those people that aren't saved, get ready, because your hell on earth is coming. I think that's there. So that's what I'm really preparing my son's soul, that he can live in eternity in heaven.
Spiritual war.
Jesus Christ. That's right.
Thank you.
So all the evil, all the devilry, all that stuff, I think that we as men and the heads of our households, we Amen. As patriots need to fortify our brothers and sisters. We should be fortifying each other and creating solidarity amongst ourselves, because in the end, it's only going to be a small group of people while all the rest of this stuff is running around like Sodom and Gomorrah in the United States.
Do you think God is done with the United States of America?
But let's look at the world as a whole. I mean, let's look at Venezuela, the recent Venezuela. I mean, let's look at all the stuff that's going on in Iran. Let's look at the things that's going in God's chosen country, His chosen people in Israel. Let's just take everything in totality. I mean, this country has been on a toilet bowl slow flush for decades now. So, man, I as far as the United States is concerned, I love this country. It's the best country on the face of this earth. I would die for this country. I think we still have value and we still have worth, but we've got kind of an uphill battle, because the last 50 years have degraded this country to such a point that we're barely hanging on by thread.
Listen, the ideals of America, the things that we're all meant to attain to, those are forever, right?
Yes.
Those things aren't just what we're supposed to, or what exists in perpetuity, because you have to fight for them. They're things that we have to preserve. Something Chris and I say pretty often, you know, Benjamin Franklin was asked, what do we have? He says, a republic if you can keep it. And it's those ideals. It's the beliefs. It's the ideology of America. It's those are the things that are, you know, supposed to be unencumbered by the stupid nonsense that humans bring down upon one another, because those can't be, you know,
they're unalienable.
They're unalienable, bro. Thank you. Yeah. Just like our rights, right? No, there's things that you can't mar. You can't do that, because they're ideals and they're things that you're supposed to attain to. So they always exist no matter what is going on, right? You know, I love my country, but I don't love my government, right? I love my country, right or wrong. It's because America stands for those values, is what it's supposed to stand for. Whether there are things going on you don't believe in, we're all supposed to be trying to move towards those things, what America is meant to stand for. So you can't corrupt those ideals. They exist. It's the people who are corrupt.
There was once an idea that was wrong.
Exactly. No, that's it, man.
That's what it is.
No, it's that whole conversation from Gladiator with Marcus Aurelius and Maximus, yes. right? Yeah. It's as cheesy as it is, it's so true. And those guys, the people, you know, Ridley Scott made that movie. They include so much of like Marcus Aurelius' stoicism from Meditations in that scene.
Which he was supposed to be Cincinnatus, by the way. Like,
what do you mean?
In that movie, no, he was supposed to be Cincinnatus in that movie. Like the ideal of him, like the idea of a guy that could go to be a general and then take a
I thought you were saying that Marcus Aurelius was supposed to be Cincinnatus. I misunderstood.
No,
I was like, wait, no, but yeah, no. That what I'm saying is again, they interwove those ideals of Stoicism right into the virtues. He says them. He's talking to Maximus. Like these again are ideals and their virtues that they can't be corrupted, because they aren't a human. They're not a person, right? There's something that you're supposed to be attaining to. And that's the whole point. It's bigger than you. Just like the United States is bigger than us. You may be a corruptible person. You're fallible. We all are. But those ideals, they reign supreme, because you can't corrupt them. We're all trying to move towards them at the same time. That's the point.
Amen, brother. Amen.
100%. Hey, sir, I have one final question, and I'm going to move my microphone, but my son asked me the other day, he was like, Dad, I want to be like you. I want to be a Green Beret. And I didn't know what to say to him at the time. If you had your kid that said, hey, I want to be like you, I want to be a Marine, what would you tell them?
Oh man, for any little boy to tell their son that they want to be like their dad, be like me, that just touches my heart. But you know, I fought, I paid enough blood, literally, for this country, that my son should not have to fight. But my son will be an ardent enough patriot that he should be able to make that decision and decide whether or not he should fight for this country or serve. I want my son to love this country, but my son does love this country. I know that. And my son is going to be a good man when he grows up. I know that. But I do not want my son to join the military in its current form or fashion,
right,
or if it continues to be in that current form or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
My son is not going to join a military where LGBTQ takes the primary front seat of actually, you know, learning how to cross open danger areas, shoot, close with destroy to the enemy by fire, close combat. I mean, that's what we do. It's not about a freaking fashion show or RuPaul's Drag Race. So no, I don't want my son to join the military in its current state right now.
I agree.
Unfortunately, the tree of tyranny must be refreshed
from time to time.
Yeah.
With the blood of patriots and tyrants alike.
Yep.
That's what I'm about, guys.
Yeah, no, the military is wondering why it has a recruiting issue, and it's because the military is supposed to be lethal. It's supposed to train people how to close in on a target. It's supposed to train people how to win wars. And when you stop prioritizing those things, the people that you're looking for to join, they look at it and say, that's no longer what it's about. Why would I go there? Right?
That's right.
It's almost like this is the easiest thing in the world, you guys. Prioritize what you're supposed to prioritize. What do we expect from you? Right? And they don't do it. And then they wonder why they have these issues. The Army wasted all this money on The Rock, right, Chris? Recently on that, they thought they were going to turn around the recruiting. It's just hilarious to me. And I want to make sure that if there was anything that we missed with you two, because you said that you're still being prosecuted. Like, you're still facing jail time?
Yeah, so I got my jail sentence pushed back just recently. I'm supposed to report to jail. I'll be in MCC San Diego.
I was just gonna say, is there any way we can support you and get that, like, is there like a GoFundMe or anything we can get that pushed back, or like a legal fund or whatever?
I do. So I'm supposed to report on or after September 16th for 75 days of federal prison.
But I
was originally supposed to report July 5th, but I unfortunately was in the hospital.
July 5th.
I was supposed to report, but I was unfortunately in the hospital from a previous combat injury, and I had to have abdominal surgery. So I got that pushed back. Everybody needs help, you know, as far as that. Yeah, I mean, if people want to donate to me, I'm telling you, I really appreciate it. Pray. You know, I have a GiftsendGo account. It's giftsendgo.com/CUNY.
Do you care if I put the whole video you sent us up on our page? Because your donation page is in the captions you guys included. Okay. Yeah.
But we literally, you know, some of that, we have met some of the best people we've ever met in our life. And we have regular communication with people we've met that have donated or just simply prayed for us on GiftsendGo. And we have tried to reach out, and literally I'll send a picture with a little thing on it. My wife will send a card. Hey, thank you. Everybody that sent something to us.
And we're trying to be a part of that, brother. Like, we want to be a part of that. Like, that's why we have you on the podcast. Like, we want to help.
Yeah.
We update the GiftsendGo. But there are other places out there, you know, even if someone doesn't want to help me, right? There's other people out there that need help. There's also the Patriot Freedom Project. Cynthia Hughes runs that. She is a fantastic woman, and she is trying to help all J6ers. You know, her primary focus is on because it's mostly men that are going through this, right? A few women.
Sure.
She's trying to focus on the spouses and the children of the J6 defendants, because what they're going through is absolutely horrid. I mean, some of these kids are living in really bad conditions. They don't have money for food. that can't work. I mean, it's just there's a lot of things. And Cynthia Hughes is doing a lot of stuff to try and help them out. She's a great woman, and she runs a great organization.
I want to make sure, well, first off, thank you for the shout outs for that, because it's important. And I just found her on social media and added her, and I'm going to reach out to her as well, because I know Chris and I would absolutely love to talk to her. And we have some other people I know who would love to talk to her. Adam Dorito would for sure. We're in a good group. We run in a good group. That's for sure. But I want to make sure that there is nothing else that you wanted to say when you thought about coming on with us, or something that's on your heart, something on your mind, something that happened to you throughout this process. We want to know, if anything that you are still thinking about that you didn't get the opportunity to say throughout the conversation.
Yeah. There's one thing that sits, near and dear my heart, as much as me and my wife, my beautiful, amazing wife and my son have gone through, throughout this entire process, we have met some of the most amazing people, like yourself, Brandon, Chris. I appreciate it. And we've met some amazing people. We have met lifetime friends throughout this. And this whole process, I look at it as people say, oh, it's a negative process. This is happening. Yeah, this sucks. And there's some days where I feel like I just can't get out. Mm-hmm. There's some days where I'm just beside myself. But, every single time this has brought me closer to my faith and closer to God than it ever has before. Because I'm telling you, man, the man up above has provided. The man has put people like you in my path. And I'm telling you, we're going to make a difference. Even if it's just one person at a time, we are going to make a difference. And it is going to happen. And you know what? The future is bright.
Mm-hmm. What you're going through
reminds me of. Have him shout out all of his social medias before he's gone.
Oh, definitely will. But just Matthew 5:10, and blessed are those who are persecuted for their righteousness. And that's you. That, to me, that's how I view the situation you're going in and that you're going through. And I know that I definitely will pray for you and what you're going through and your time that if you do end up going to prison. And we would love to talk to you afterwards too, and what happened, what that was like, and then, just how you're feeling. And I know that you're going to, want to take some time to yourself. I could imagine that's what I would want to do, but, truly thank you to you for coming on and talking to us. I couldn't imagine the last couple of years that you've had. Have to be just absolutely insane. And then everything that your family has gone through, your children, your wife, so we pray for you and really appreciate your time here with us tonight, man.
Yeah. Let's make it a habit, touch base.
I would love that.
Sir. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Brother.
Yeah. Always faithful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Tell us where we can find you. And then we'll go ahead and wrap up. Want people to be able to find you and follow what's going on with you.
I'm probably going to get an X account. I am not a social media. I have never had social media because of my security clearance.
Yeah.
That's just a fact. So I don't have any social media. The only thing I have is givesendgo.com/Kuehne, Kuehne.
Okay.
I update it. It's got links. It'll have this. Once I get it, it'll have this link for this interview on it so people can see it.
Awesome.
But other than that, I don't have any type of social media right now. You guys are my social media.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, I mean, I honestly can't blame you for not having social media, even without all the security clearance stuff, because it's just a shit show 24/7. So. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for talking with us tonight. And for everybody listening, head over to his GiveSendGo. Thank you guys for listening. Understand too that lawfare is a real thing, everything that's going on. And just be mindful. We have to hold on to our republic, and it takes proactives. And one thing you said earlier that I really wanted to highlight is you said you're a citizen. And that's something that Chris and I talk about really often, is that citizenship is not passive existence. Citizenship is being proactive. It's protecting our rights. It's being aware of the things going on when we're, people are infringing on our rights. So I love that you said that, because it's not just something that is, right? And there's not enough emphasis on that. Ancient Rome, being a citizen used to mean something, and gradually what citizen meant was eroded for a lot of different reasons. And we're watching that happen too, just in a different way. But the meaning of what citizen means is being eroded much in the same way as it has been historically. So I really like that you said that. But everybody listening, thank you so much for listening to another episode of I Came With Fire podcast. We want to say a special thank you to our sponsors over at Redefine Violence, Skull and Crossbeans Coffee, and then the Light Sleeper. You can use codes FIRE10 at checkout for 10% off your entire purchase. And then don't miss our live show, Live Fire, every Friday night, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Chris, were you trying to get me to say something? I saw your little hand movements.
No, I just, I love Live Fire so much because I went out to the mountains and I had them and they kept me warm.
The Light Sleeper. Yeah, man. It's good stuff. Proof of concept. Chris has used it. Yeah. But no, thank you again. I appreciate you, Chris, for coming on with us and talking. And yeah, I'll give you the final word and we'll close out.
No, thank you, gentlemen. God bless you. And I hope and pray that you do well on your show. I think we need people like you in the country. And I hope to talk to you again soon.
We definitely will. And all right, guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of I Came With Fire podcast. And we're out.